increase. It's described on the front page with a table on the back. The range of rate increase for the residential customer is from 45 cents to $1.80 per month for customers, depending on how much garbage they generate. For the most common level of customer service, the garbage can size is the 32-gallon can. That will go up $1.10 per month. It's a 4.35% increase. So just to be clear about these rate increases, all the costs aren't just driven by the haulers. We put in clean fleet requirements. We want newer trucks on the streets of Portland that have the newer reduced air emissions so that there's less diesel emissions being generated throughout Portland. This is a graduated policy that council's adopted, and it's now coming into as trucks begin, the older, more polluting trucks are getting phased out. That's the single largest increase in the hauler's costs is some of those trucks. So be mindful, it's a partnership. We've given the direction, they've carried it out. That's a cost. And the second largest increase is Metro is going to be increasing their tip fee at their transfer station to cover their costs. So we believe this rate increase has gone through thorough review. It's been reviewed and supported by the Portland Utility Review Board. And we're I could speak in more detail, but I'd be happy to answer any questions on this ordinance before I move to the commercial tonnage fee.
Questions from council?
I don't think you said it, but you should. It's here in your sheet. The fact that the yard debris rate's going up is because it's being wildly successful. People are using it more. Is that a correct?
That's
Bruce.
Right. Commissioner Salzman, you're absolutely right. When we launched the program providing the blue carts for recycling and green carts for yard debris, one of the we anticipated people would compost more yard debris. And so that is exactly what's happening. So we've seen, even though we forecast some increases with the larger vessel capacity, we're seeing people use it even more than we expected. So that's another cost driver that the haulers are collecting that. There's a cost to put it into a compost facility, but that's a good thing to keep it out of the landfill and to make a valuable soil amendment. So that is one of the another large cost driver in our system.
And then the cost for recyclable materials that the haulers collect from us, you're saying here they're projected to improve. In other words, I guess the price for metal, newspaper, all that is expected to improve. And when that does, it will reduce net costs?
Right.
Approximately 50 cents per month?
Right. Thank you, Commissioner Salzman. He's doing a better job on the presentation than I am. But the details are that as haulers pick up materials, recyclable materials, they're put into use by industry, typically in the domestic U.S. industries that use plastics, paper, and metal. That has the value of those materials dropped along with the downturn in the economy. There's less demand for raw materials, if you will, to make new products. That has increased, and we would see if it were remaining at bottom-of-the-barrel levels as they were a year ago, we would see a rate increase of about 50 cents more per month. But those markets have increased, and that is offset customer rates, and so that's very much a positive in terms of the state of recycling, if you will. Thank you.
Second presentation.
Okay. We are proposing, thank you, the commercial tonnage fee increase of $1, and that is to institute a public recycling stations located beginning in downtown Portland over the course of the next fiscal year, and it would be expanded. It's a two-year implementation project. Now, this was part of our the Portland Recycles Plan that was adopted by City Council in 2008. And as we look to expand this program, we see the value of, one, obviously making it more easy when people are coming off the buses, trains, or out on a lunchtime walk, if they've got either reading materials, the paper, or a beverage container, they can put it in a public recycling container. Other cities have made some of these moves, and this is, we believe, at a minimum, it's providing a good outlet for recycling in the downtown core. But also, it's a statement, and it's saying we value recycling in Portland, and it's creating higher awareness for everyone who comes through our city. We're proposing this through what's effectively this dollar increase in the overall scheme of disposal, along with Metro's $85 per ton tipping fee, it's only a 1.1% increase in what haulers would pay for the commercially generated amount of disposal. So we believe it's a very cost-effective use, and it would be put to implementation beginning this program in the next fiscal year. Now, you will hear concerns raised by PURB, Portland Utility Review Board, about just the cost of the containers. And we went through a very involved process along with the Portland Mall Management and Portland Bureau of Transportation, TriMet, to make sure that we were going to do it right if we were going to put containers out. They're designed similarly to the trash containers that are already on the transit mall, so it would be a complementary design. It would focus on again, the increased availability of recycling. But in terms of the cost of those containers, we put it out through a bid through purchasing. So this just isn't some back-of-the-envelope estimated cost. It's a well-researched program, and the question before you would be, do we want to expand a program and carry it out in Portland? And this would be the method to do so.
I had a question. So yes. Will these containers be for all commingled waste?
We've
metal,
got
paper.
It would not be all mixed together. So this is an excellent question. We've looked at how do we do our recycling system both at work and in the home. And it would essentially be, there'd be three openings. I did not bring a diagram to support, but one for glass. Glass needs to be kept separate. The other for any other beverage containers, plastic or metal, and then a slot for papers, newspaper or other types of papers that people may have. And these would be collected through we have contracts to provide service collection that would be included in this $1 per ton increase in the fee that would collect all this material and get it to recycling markets.
I was just going to ask, I know the Rose Garden, the Blazers, mm-hmm. I was recently there when they received their LEED Gold certification, I think the first public arena in the mm-hmm. country to do that, and they have these containers now. As I understand, were made out of waste rubber, but they have four slots. They have a compost slot as well. Is that something we thought about, or
first of all, our office worked with the Rose Garden. That's a very admirable approach there. The concern we had about the compost is we thought it was going to be very challenging out on the sidewalks, if you will, of somebody maybe taking that extra step of scraping the leftovers from their lunch or something. I'm not trying to downplay that because that's exactly what we're moving with many Portland businesses already and in the four pilot areas that we're working on. So, but we did not believe this was the best first step to try to implement this on the sidewalks of downtown.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
So just a procedural note, since there are only three of us, we won't be hearing any emergency ordinances this morning, so those will be deferred till this afternoon for those waiting. How many of you have signed up to testify on these issues, please?
We have about four people.
Okay.
Also, there was a request to pull up 699, the transportation fee ordinance. I don't know if they're here.
Well,
the mayor's office had requested that earlier.
They wanted
to pull up 699 to be heard with the other 945 rate ordinances.
Our staff from transportation here. So I think that's on the regular agenda, so we might defer that. Okay. I'd like to ask the members of the Portland Utility Review Board who are here if they'd like to come up and testify on these issues. You put in an enormous amount of citizen volunteer time to give us your good advice, and I'd like you to have the time to give us your advice on all four of these ordinances.
So I'm just going to largely read from the testimony that was previously submitted to the council. And the purpose...
Can you give us your name?
Oh, I'm sorry. Janice Adler. I'm vice chair of the PURB. So the PURB perspective regarding the proposed utility rates is a good news, bad news situation. The good news, it's best to start with the good news, is that there will be an audit of utility-based revenues. And the PURB wants to thank the city auditor for scheduling a PURB-recommended audit of utility-based revenues collected by the Water Bureau and BES to determine whether use of these revenues is utility-related. The PURB would also like to thank the mayor for including a PURB-recommended request for a consultant to report on best practices for the public utility rate setting process. With respect to specific utility bureaus, all the PURB members support the food scrap recycling program and the purchase of durable lunch trays for use in Portland public schools that was proposed by the Solid Waste Department Bureau. And now comes the bad news. The bad news is that residential water, sewer, and garbage rates are going up. And the PURB does not support the purchase of public recycling containers that Mr. Walker just discussed. We support the philosophy. We agree with increased public awareness of recycling. But a breakdown of the numbers showed that the cost of each recycling container would be $1,800, and it would take 10 years to recoup the cost, and the PURB just felt that that was excessive. Regarding sewer rates, the board appreciates that the increase in the average single-family sewer and stormwater bill will be less than it might have been. However, the PURB does not believe that non-core mission expenditures have been removed from the BES budget. Hopefully, the audit and best practices report will weed out unnecessary costs in BES and the Water Bureau. In addition, PURB recommends that the Water Bureau use the 2006 QualServe peer review report. And the Water Bureau should expeditiously plan, design, and execute a program that implements the most promising opportunities for improvement that were identified in the report. And the target goal would be a 15% reduction in controllable costs by 2015. I believe the mayor at the last meeting asked for some additional information about how the PURB subcommittee came up with that 15% reduction, and I have information provided by the subcommittee if you want copies or...
You could send it in later because we're not voting on this until next week. So
that I'm clear about what you're saying, you're suggesting a 15% reduction, not in the rates, but in the controllable costs.
Correct.
And how much of that is a percentage of the budget? What is the controllable cost portion that's a percentage of the current budget? Do you know what that is?
I don't. I would... Okay.
It was about 4.6%, if my memory serves me.
Of the whole budget?
Yes.
So 15% of the 4.6 could be saved.
Correct.
But okay, well, we'll look at that.
The only other comments I have are about the PURB meeting minutes. We're still don't have minutes from the March, April, or this month's meeting, and the PERB recommends that it receive some sort of designated administrative support so it can receive the meeting minutes in a timely manner. And we'd just like to remind the council that three positions on the PERB will be open for appointment as of the end of next month, and we recommend that the city find replacements as soon as possible.
Thank you, Janice.
Which three positions are those?
Oh, I don't have that information in front of me. Do you know?
One is the outgoing Tracy Marks, who represents industry. One is my position, which is an at-large position representing public health. And the third is the general citizenry.
Okay. I think it's a Westside resident.
Westside.
Right. Lila, did you have any further comments?
No.
So I have a question for you both. You didn't give us a specific recommendation for the Water Bureau rate increase in your memo.
You mean a number?
Yes. You didn't really comment on the Water Bureau rate increase. Your main comments were about this other study, which I appreciate, and I think that's a good thing to do. But what is your advice on the Water Bureau rate increase?
You know, I think we understand that the increases are related to, in large part, the LT2 costs, but we think that there are administrative costs that can be cut. We don't have a specific number for, that would be an appropriate rate increase, you know, except that the Water Bureau is going to be raising rates by over 10%, and, you know, it'd be nice if it were less.
Did the PERB have a discussion about no cuts in the Water Bureau and whether that was appropriate?
No, we didn't have the discussion.
So to respond to your question, I'm Lila Wickham. The PERB this year decided to take a different strategy on looking at rates, and rather than try to say this should be reduced by X percent or try to define what that amount should be for the budget, our strategy was to look at the big picture and make recommendations about having the auditor's office audit the budget, look at best practices. So believing that the directors of the bureaus are really competent people and manage their budgets well, but asking them to look at these quality indicators and audit standards and find things that could be reduced. So it was purposeful not to ask for a specific amount.
Thank you. Other questions? Thank you very much. Who do we have signed up to testify?
If Floyd Jones, Mike Dewey, and Dave White.
Good morning. Thank you for waiting.
Good morning.
Have 3 minutes and just state your first and last name. No address, please.
My name is Floyd Jones. I'm a native Eastside Portlander, and I'm representing Friends of the Reservoirs. And Friends of the Reservoirs do not support the 12.9%. I came in believing that was the increase, an increase that, according to the Water Bureau's financial plan, actually translates to a 16.7% increase to the typical residential water bill. When you combine this with last year's 17.9% rate hike, which translated to a 19.6% increase, residents will see a 36% increase in their water bills in just 2 years. And according to the plans, water bills will double by 2015. These increases are not affordable. 40% of the Water Bureau budget is debt service, and with bonds being issued annually, that figure is sure to rise. We believe there should be personnel reductions. We do not support spending $12 million on consultant contracts for further design of the UV radiation plant, a plant that will likely never be built and should never be built. The city must direct the Water Bureau to prepare a data document supportive of the available safe drinking water treatment technique reservoir variants. Public money has already been spent on data collection, yet that data is being kept hidden from the public. A broad-based group of community stakeholders do not support spending $800 million with debt service for reservoir burial, creating new risks, and providing no measurable public health benefit. Ratepayers will continue to pay upwards of $45 million in open reservoir upgrades for the next 25 years. Work is still being performed as scheduled this summer on open reservoir upgrade contracts. While Friends of the Reservoir supported the Sandy River Crossing project, we do not support the nearly tripling of the cost of that project. There must be better controls on CIP project costs. Addressing the ongoing issues with revolving door consultants will go a long way to address those costs. At a December budget meeting, the Portland Water Bureau proclaimed that the Sandy River project was on budget. Having reviewed the CH2M Hill project documents through a FOIA request, I knew the statement to be grossly inaccurate. At the start of this project, it was noted as being budgeted at $12 million, a figure that included a whopping 40% contingency on top of a 20% contingency for steel, which was based on an actual quote. So what was an $8 million project, in the end, the final cost is $22 million. We support, Friends of the Reservoir support addressing long-deferred maintenance projects, but we do not support overlapping large maintenance and capital improvement projects, as is the case with this budget. It makes water bills unaffordable. I served on the Water Bureau Budget Committee for 4 to 5 years, between 2005 and 2009. The current Water Bureau Budget Committee does not represent the broad-based community. And there was a comment made this morning that there was extensive public outreach, and there was absolutely no public outreach with regard to the Water Bureau budget.
Thank you. Could you just clarify, you said that the 12.9% rate increase translates to a 16.7 increase? How is that?
That's from the financial plan, and I believe it's based on increases to the base budget. So there's a 12% or 12.9% to the water rate, but there's also an increase to the base charge. And I'm quoting, these figures are taken directly from the Water Bureau's financial plan, and I could send you that link.
Thank you very much. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, council members. My name is Dave White. I'm regional representative for the Oregon Refuse and Recycling Association. I also chair the Tri-County Council, which is the local association that represents Portland's residential solid waste and recycling collectors. I'm here today to ask for your support for the residential rate ordinance that's before you. Well, my comments are really about the difficult economic situation we all find ourselves in. I want you and residential customers in the city to know that throughout the region and in Portland, haulers are doing what they can to contain the costs associated with providing collection service. And they're working to do so in a way that allows them to maintain excellent customer service and operational safety. We are all working together to weather the economic storm. And I have a brief comment about the future. The city has implemented a pilot project to test the collection of food scraps with yard debris and moving to every other week collection of garbage. Our members are assisting the city with this pilot. Like you, we want a program that helps meet the city's recovery goals, meets the needs of the residents, which are our customers, and provides sustainable benefits in the future. We appreciate that the city has listened to our input in developing the pilot, and we look forward to working with you to implement any changes that result. And finally, we appreciate that the Portland Utility Review Board supports the proposed rates and their acknowledgement of our efforts to contain costs and increase efficiencies. Thank you.
Thank you for coming down.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Madam Chair. And for the record, Mike Dewey, representing the company Waste Management, on behalf of Waste Management. We have a very good working relationship with the Bureau. The food waste, I think, is a good collaborative approach to how Waste Management and other haulers are taking advantage of these, I think, tremendous opportunities. I did want to comment just briefly on the Clean Fleet proposal, and it's actually in action now. Waste Management supported that, and that's a significant part of this increase. And one of the conversations we've been having with staff, with Metro, and just recently Washington County, a letter went out to the haulers regarding other modes of transportation in terms of vehicles and fueling. And one is the area of compressed natural gas. Our company is doing that in Seattle and in Southern California and in some areas using landfill gas. And I mention that because And we think we ought to take a look at that, and I say that because the NOx greenhouse gas emissions are literally zero with compressed natural gas, and the particulates, PMs, are zero also. So we appreciate what the city is doing and the Bureau, but there are next steps that can be taken. In light of that, it is somewhat expensive to move in that direction. And some of you may know that there is a cap on the number of residential customers a company can have, and that's 50,000 in the city. Waste management is approaching that particular cap, and we've had conversations with the Bureau about perhaps some suggested changes, and we appreciate that, and we'll hopefully have that conversation with you. And the reason we talk about that is for economies of scale to move to the next step in terms of sustainability, this is an area that needs to be looked at in comparison to how you're going to get to the next goals of recycling and recovery. So with that, we hope to have that conversation fairly soon. And as an aside, congratulations, Commissioner. Be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
I just have one follow-up question on that. So did you say you're doing that in Seattle right now, using compressed natural gas?
Yes, we are. That's part of the franchise agreement that we have in Seattle and also in...
And how big is, how many customers is your franchise in Seattle?
Commissioner, I don't know the number. There are two haulers. They did a RFP in that particular area on the commercial side. So we're moving in that direction. We think it's something that's exciting. The trucks are more expensive. Fueling right now is less. The fueling stations are fairly expensive, though, and so that has to be taken into consideration. In California, we're using our own gas from the landfill to fuel some of the trucks, which could be opportunities here with landfills that we operate and for other haulers and operators of landfills.
Yeah, I agree. It's an exciting idea, and that it is a good match because landfills do generate gas, and it'd be great to be using that to make cleaner vehicles. I guess maybe you can get back to me later through email or something.
We'd be happy.
What do you view as the critical threshold number of customers you have to need to make it work?
Yeah, and I think that's a regional approach because these trucks cross boundaries, governmental boundaries. So whatever you do has an impact in Washington County and Clackamas County and in other jurisdictions.
I'm interested, Mike, in your comment that the trucks cost more money. Does it require a different kind of internal combustion engine, or can you use the standard diesel engine that these trucks use and just do they convert the tank to a high-pressured natural gas tank?
Commissioner, the short answer is it's a different engine.
It's a different engine.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Further testimony?
That's all who signed up.
Did anybody else want to testify on this? We will be taking more comments at the budget hearing tomorrow evening and by email and telephone. So from my perspective, every one of the members of the council participated in the mayor's recalibrated budget, and I think there's still openings for further amendments. So citizens should know that your participation really does matter and that this coming week is the time to get your opinions in. We hope to see folks at the University Park tomorrow evening. Excuse me. Thank you to staff for your presentations. So that moves us. We can't do any of the emergency ordinances, so would you please read the title for item 696? Oops, yes.
We actually didn't take the 667, 10:15 time certain.
Oh, sorry. Thank you. 667.
Yes, 667. Amend fee schedules for building, electrical, mechanical, plumbing, facility permit, field issuance, remodel, land use services, neighborhood inspections, noise control, signs, site development, zoning, and certain construction permits.
Thank you. Commissioner Lennon.
Thank you. Paul, you want to come? Excuse me, Paul, come forward with your team. It's been a particularly challenging year for the Bureau of Development Services, I would say uniquely. So not just for the Bureau of Development Services, but within the city. Paul and Denise, who are before us now, and their management team have just done a stellar job of guiding this Bureau through the economic downturn that's led to the layoff of over half of the employees at the Bureau of Development Services. In spite of that, they continue to perform outstanding service, and as a result of that, have come forward with the fee increase request that they're going to explain at this point. Paul?
Great. Thank you, Commissioner Leonard. Good morning, Paul Scarlett, Bureau of Development Services Director. Good morning, Commissioner Fritz, Commissioner Salzman. I am accompanied with Denise Klein, our Business Operations Manager, presenting and hoping for your support for the Bureau's proposal to increase fees to cover its related expenses. Over the years, since 1988, the Bureau, through Council's direction, has relied primarily on permit fees to support its construction-related programs. And through those related programs, the fees that are in place, which are calculated on valuations and hence generate the fees necessary to support and offset our expenses, has worked well. That arrangement, in times when construction activities are vibrant, yields us good amounts in fees to the point where we can meet two of our goals. The number one goal is to meet cost recovery 100% on a daily operation, and the other is, as part of an operating bureau, we're required to meet a five-year financial plan. We put away as much money as we can to weather storms such as the one we're currently experiencing. We were able to put away quite a bit of money, $13 million or so, over a period of years, and we have exhausted that rainy day fund, if you will. The fees we're proposing are consistent with fees we have proposed in the past. We are analyzing on an ongoing basis, but in this case, we back in February when we submitted the budget and financial plan, looked at state indicators that covers construction activities, labor costs, price index, and essentially connected realistically with the workload, the valuation of projects, the cost of our operation, and presented fees. And that's consistent with what we call a realistic indicators. And in February, we presented fee increases of 5%. Since that time, and unfortunately continues to today, the valuation of projects continued to decline. In large part, the large projects, the $20, $30, $40, $100 million projects that we were seeing on a regular basis four years ago, have dwindled mostly to smaller projects, small alterations, remodeling projects, and hence we're not receiving the permit fees necessary to offset our expenses. For the last 9 months, our costs have outpaced revenue on the average of $150,000 per month. The fees we're proposing isn't necessarily geared at trying to make up that gap. We understand, and we've taken other measures to reduce our costs. As Commissioner Leonard indicated, we had to resort to last act of cutting our staff by 50%. And we, for 9 months, were operating and based on some other factors such as valuations continue to decline, workload continue to decline, we're at another juncture of having to lay off additional staff. So these fee increases are necessary. The mission of the Bureau is to promote safety, livability, economic vitality. The work the employees of the Bureau of Development Services do in meeting that mission and the goals to provide accurate, timely service really is vibrant and necessary. And we need to hold on to our employees, and the fee increases help to support the mission of the Bureau and the goal. And in fact, without fee increases, we are very concerned that the impacts to the service may experience further decline. And so we're very confident in the information we've provided. We've worked, as we've done in the past, with our industry partners and have received support from our Development Review Advisory Council and other entities such as the Home Builders Association, Building Owners and Managers Association, Facilities Program Building Owners. So we're excited. Certainly, it's also would be remiss of me if I didn't share with you that not everyone is excited about fee increases, and for good reasons. Obviously, this is a difficult economic time, and we understand. However, the fact that the Bureau relies on fees to support 90% of its operation leaves us very little choice, and 10% of the other 10% comes from general fund and interagency fees. So the building-related programs, which is based on valuation of projects, and the fees that are increased or proposed to be increased, which is at 8% now, will get us the necessary funding to maintain the operations and to continue the service level that we pride ourselves on. Certainly that's been impacted, but we still hold that as a hallmark. And in conjunction, we want to, of course, continue to pursue innovation and creative programs to suit and meet the needs of our customers, as well as continue to meet the city's and the Bureau's mutual goal of being a livable city and an attractive city and a safe city. So we have specifics, and there's an amendment that was submitted yesterday to the fee increases. Denise Klein will go over those details. Thank you.
Thank you. Denise Klein with BDS. So on the amendment that you have, there are just some minor changes. One was on the plan check on a minimum fee that we just missed. It was for normally was shown as $69, and we're asking that that be $70. And then we lowered two fees. One was plan review for wireless facilities from $750 to $500, and the other one was an administrative review fee in our enforcement schedule. So most of these were very minor changes to the original ordinance. There was also something that was crossed out that should have been underlined. So a couple of housekeeping things and another couple things that were lowered.
So we have that amendment, Carla.
Okay. Commissioner Fish, or I'm sorry, Commissioner Fritz, may I ask for a brief comment from Denise? There's one other comment that's not, or one change that's not mentioned in your memo that I just checked with staff, and it's a very minor amendment, but it might be worth mentioning to council that on Exhibit F, the very last line of the current has an enforcement waiver application fee of $100. That line is now removed from Exhibit F.
Is that Exhibit E?
Exhibit F, the very last line in Exhibit F, page 1 of 1.
Very last line, search warrant abatement fee.
They're on the current version of Exhibit F. There's something. The last line is called enforcement waiver fee application fee, and that is no longer on Exhibit F. So that's a minor change that's not mentioned in the memo.
It's been revised.
You're right. Thank you. Yes, that's correct.
So, do you have the amendment?
I don't know whether I have the original or the amendment.
Could you hand those out, please?
I'm not sure which version I have.
Thank you. So, Lindley. So you're talking about Exhibit F, administrative review fee, or which fee were you talking about?
That's correct.
It's currently called the enforcement waiver application fee. I honestly don't have any idea what that is. It just does not show up on
Exhibit
F. Yeah. So if you look at the amended copy, if you're all looking at that Exhibit F, the last line on the last page, which is title enforcement fee and penalty schedule. The last line says...
Hold up here, list, because I want to make sure we're all caught up there. And I'm
should be the last piece of paper in the amendment.
I'm looking at Exhibit F. I'm sorry, I don't
right.
see...
He's got the one that just handed out. This is the one that came in the packet
yes.
earlier.
I'm looking at the one just handed out.
Okay.
The one just handed out. The last line in the one just handed out says, search warrant abatement fee 200. And we should have had another line under there that was crossed out that said enforcement waiver application fee $100. So you should have a line at the very end of that page that is crossed out that says enforcement waiver application fee.
And we don't. So that's, it is.
So is the intent to have the enforcement waiver application fee of $100?
No, the intent is to not have it. We proposed it originally, and then we decided not to have it because we felt it was too burdensome for the applicants asking for a waiver.
Mm-hmm. But it is not in what you've handed out.
And it shouldn't be. We don't want to have it enacted.
Sorry about that.
That shows this enforcement waiver application fee, and the substitute exhibit F no longer has that.
The substitute is correct, but you're just bringing that to our attention.
I'm sorry. I misunderstood. Okay. I thought you meant it was in the amendment, too. So the amendment, Lindley, is correct.
The amendment is correct, just the memo and the staff presentation.
All right. So if I move the amendment, we're good.
Yep.
I move the amendment.
Okay.
Do you want to second that, Commissioner Salzman?
Sure.
It's been moved and seconded to substitute. Please call the roll.
Salzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Thank you. I apologize for all the confusion there.
It's important to get it right.
So part of what Paul was talking about was how we really went through our fee schedule in great detail, as you can see, why we made even last-minute changes to it. And part of what we're seeing that Paul mentioned was we are seeing a different mix of work. We obviously are not getting high-rise condos into the work mix. We are not getting large projects into the work mix. And as you know, we did rely on those projects in terms of revenues. So we spent a lot of time working on the fee schedules to really more reflect the work that we have and the work that we anticipate coming to us in the next several years. I don't know if you remember, but there was a 5-year moratorium on our building permit fee schedule fee increases. July 1, that moratorium is lifted. The moratorium was there because of the enactment of the development review fee, development services review fee 5 years ago. So we spent a lot of time looking at the building permit fee schedule. We looked a lot at our minimum fees, and our minimum fees were not covering the cost of service. So overall, we are raising our minimum fees in most fee schedules to about $70 for each minimum permit. In addition, for the building permit fee schedule, we raised the lower end of the fee schedule higher than the upper end. So someone who has a project that is in the up to about $25,000 range, their fee increase is higher than someone that has, say, a $10 million project. They're still all paying more fees than prior, but the fee increase is weighted to that lower end to acknowledge that that is where the work is at this point, and to bring those permits up to more of a cost recovery model, because at this point they are not. So we did that. And we also looked at for the building permit fees, at limiting the number of inspections per permit for some of the lower end work, and are continuing to work on that so that, for example, a minimum fee that you'd pay $70. Right now there is unlimited inspections. We try and work with clients, et cetera, but we will be implementing a limitation on how many inspections they would actually get for that permit. And additional,
would it be more accurate for people listening to say how many
reinspections? Thank you. Good.
Because you inspect
how many
the first time, obviously.
Yes.
As
how
part
many
of permit,
reinspections?
But sometimes there are consistent problems that you have to go back for, so there are reinspections.
That's correct.
So then, what happens if their problem is not fixed and the inspection limit is reached?
Well, we'll be working with them first. First, we'll be working with them on what the issue really is. And I know that in all cases, not in all cases will we say, you are at your limit. But for the ones that are at the limit, then there would be an $85 charge for another re-inspection.
Or re-inspection.
Yes, per inspection. And we're at this point not ready for a hard implementation on July 1. We're working with our IT system to make changes in that so that we're able to do that more on an easier basis for the permit applicant, and the implementation will be more of a soft implementation of that.
That's included in this request?
It's included in the fee proposal, yes.
In operation, we've vetted this with the Development Review Advisory Council and outreach.
So does the Office of Management Finance support this? Fee increase?
As part of our budget proposal, which includes fee increases, yes. As far as I know, we've worked with them closely. I've not heard any objections.
And so we had an increase in January.
Yes.
And we're doing it again in July. And we're also looking at a potential $5 million investment in technology that's supposed to be paid back in part on, well, it's supposed to be paid back from revenues generated from future development.
Correct.
I guess I'm just kind of a little puzzled here.
Yeah. The fee increases
I understand sort of the dire conditions you're in, but at the same time, how could we possibly be looking at a forecast of construction growth that would possibly ever repay a $5.5 million general fund loan at this point?
Well, let me take a stab at that. We are, as you know, Commissioner Saltzman, not in so much of a recession as we are the downside of a business cycle. And business cycles are consistent throughout the history of this country and the world. We happen to be at this point in time at the bottom of a business cycle. And we anticipate those. We know they're coming, just as we know that as slow as construction is now, we absolutely know that at some point in the future, we will have to ramp up again when construction picks up and the economy heats up. That is the typical business cycle. We, with the concurrence of OMF, believe that by loaning us the $5.2 million to do, frankly, what should have been done a decade ago, automate our and digitize our permitting system, including allowing for developers to submit architectural plans online via email, which we are capable of doing now, that we will more than be able to pay back our loan. It will actually allow us to put a greater amount into reserves, because we won't need the personnel that we currently need to manage the existing system. We will have a system that relies on much fewer people at any given point in time than we have had needed in the past. So there's no question in my mind that as the stock market drops, so it rises. As the economy suffers, so it prospers. And we're just having to get through these difficult times with the idea in mind that things will turn around as they always have.
I guess, I've spoke with OMF last week, I believe, and this was certainly one of the topics we spoke about, and I was led to believe they want to drive a very independent analysis of the ability to repay, because I accept what Commissioner Leonard says, we do operate in cycles, but sometimes, those of us who rely solely on what's happened in the past to predict what's happened in the future often find out we're wrong. And, there may never be a building boom that we've witnessed in the last 4 or 5 years again in Portland. So I think we need a really good, hard, independent analysis of that. And I'm told OMF is insisting upon that.
And we've agreed to it.
And that's actually occurred. We have a preliminary report.
Excellent. But the bigger point is whether there's another building boom ever like the one we experienced in the 90s and the early parts of this decade or not, aside. People who come in and get a permit deserve to have a modernized permitting system. And we don't have the capacity to do that now. This will allow us to do that, and this will allow us to repay the loan as well, I'm convinced. And I think that what we're trying to do is not just suffer from the consequences of a devastating blow, but to also see this as an opportunity to implement some fundamental structural changes at the Bureau of Development Services that, frankly, in good times would be impossible to do for a variety of reasons. And now this is the, ironically, best time to implement these structural changes that, by the way, come with labor support now that I would think in good times would not have.
So, again, these fees have been approved by the Development Review Advisory Committee?
Yes.
By the Building Owner and
Managers? We have a letter in support.
Building Owners and Managers Association?
Yes.
Did the Small Business Advisory Committee see
it
these?
It was presented to Small Business Advisory Council, and we did get support. Yes. I met with the chair, new chair, Andrew, can't remember his last name, supportive of it.
I have a question about the noise variance for construction activities, which is on page 1 of 2 of Exhibit G. And it talks about a review fee for a variance that's limited to a maximum of $680 per 12-month period after having been $408 for the first week. So I'm wondering, why would we waive noise standards for a very long time without requiring additional penalties or additional fees for that waiver?
There are sometimes there's construction projects that go on for an extended period of time. A lot of them are public works kinds of projects. And so this is in here so that to give the ability of the Noise Review Board to carefully review the request for variance and then grant variances that are necessary for that sort of work. They spend a lot of time quizzing and grilling the applicants at their meetings and take it very, very seriously and ask for all kinds of mitigation to be put in place before they approve these kinds of things.
So what kind of tools and approval criteria do they have to be able to instruct companies to be quieter or as quickly as possible?
Well, our noise review officer looks at things. In some cases, there's an acoustical engineer that's been hired that provides a report. And at times, the noise review board will ask for certain other mitigation, additional baffling, and that sort of thing. So it really is very dependent upon the case.
This seems very limited, though, the $680 for 12 months compared with $408 for the first week.
Oh, you think it's too low? Is that what you mean?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
There doesn't seem to be much of a incentive to get your noisy stuff done as efficiently as possible if you're not really paying that much more for doing it for 12 months versus 2 weeks.
Oh, I see what you mean. Hmm. I understand what you're saying. I think that when the applications are reviewed by the noise officer and the manager and noise review board, they're pretty savvy and do consider what the project is and how long it will take and that sort of thing. But I understand what your point is on that.
Well, I encourage you next time that you're coming with a rate package to look at that kind of incentive that the Noise Review Board and the Noise Officer could also use, and it could also bring you some more revenue. And there should be more revenue given that part of development services work is funded by the general fund, that those additional fees would help support your total work. And I want to take this opportunity to mention how very much I appreciate the diligent work that you and your staff have been doing under very, very difficult circumstances. And I appreciate the rate increase, but even more, I appreciate the work that the staff continues to do.
Thank you.
We can actually look at this between now and your next meeting and see if there's some
But I also want to be mindful we have a very specific process we go through with the private sector and the public sector, including the Portland's land use chair.
Correct.
And I want to be very respectful of that. And any proposed change from this needs to go through that as well. Otherwise, we lose the ability to have assurances to that group when they agree to fee increases. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I appreciate Commissioner Fritz's point, but I don't want to just disregard the process that you all go through.
Thank you. The other point that I wanted to make is in terms of nuisance abatement fees and to offer the Office of Neighborhood Involvement to work with you and your staff, that where there are occasions where it's a homeowner or a resident can't do the work and your staff feels that assistance might be better than fining, that I know that Bonnie McKnight and the Citywide Land Use Chairs and others in the Office of Neighborhood Involvement System would be interested in looking at neighborhood associations helping with volunteer work, where it's an elderly person, for example, or somebody with a disability who can't mow their lawn, that if you could look with us at alternative mechanisms to call for help rather than fining, where you believe it's appropriate. I mean, obviously, if somebody's willfully neglecting their property, absentee landlord, whatever, then certainly I think the fee imposition is entirely appropriate. Then there are other situations, which I know Commissioner Leonard in the past has been very mindful of, in terms of homeowners or residents needing a little bit of assistance to get things fixed up rather than paying for it. Right. We would be very happy to work with you on that.
Great. Ross Caron, the manager for that division, had a good conversation with Bonnie McKnight last week, and this afternoon there is an ordinance coming with the nuisance for nuisance abatement liens as another tool for us to have in their cache, and we pride ourselves on working with people at the lowest level first and as extensively as possible before assessing penalties, so I appreciate the recommendation.
Thank you. Thank you. Do we have anybody signed up to testify on this matter?
We do. One person, Jeff Fish.
Please come forward, Mr. Fish. Still, yeah, you hung in there. Thank you for waiting. I appreciate it. Still good morning.
Yeah, we're still there, aren't we?
Yeah, we're doing well.
Good morning, Presiding Commissioner Fritz, Commissioner Leonard, and congratulations, Commissioner Salzman, on your reelection. I'm wearing three hats today. I'm a home builder here in Portland, and I'm testifying on my behalf, but also testifying as a DRAC member, and I'm also here representing the Portland Home Builders Association at their request.
Could you say your name for the record?
Oh, I'm sorry, Jeff Fish.
Thank you.
You have on file a letter from DRAC Chairman Steve Heitine noting the discussion DRAC has had regarding BDS's dire financial situation and the proposed fee increases. I believe we as a committee would not have supported these fee increases if there had not been the sincere efforts by Commissioner Leonard, Director Paul Scarlett, and their staff to do what has been necessary to attempt to bring BDS's expenses in line with their revenues. And as a body, we reviewed those at the DRAC meeting and passed the approved fee increases. And representing the Portland Home Builder Association, again, we would not have been supportive if it hadn't been for the efforts that I just mentioned a few seconds ago regarding the last couple of years of trying to bring revenues and expenses in line. An 8% fee increase was more than we had anticipated. We'd had discussions with Commissioner Leonard's office over the last couple of years of the difference between, as Ms. Klein mentioned, where revenues were coming in at the home builder and at the public's level and being supported or being carried over by large construction projects. So we were aware that we were going to have to bring those fees up. 8% is a little higher than we anticipated, but due to the dire situation, we've agreed that that's where we need to go, and so the Home Builder Association is supporting that. As we go forward from this point, I think one thing we should always remember is that as we get back into better times, we need to consistently look at and analyze fee structures and service increases as they would be looked at in tough times. And having said that, we do, both the DRAC, the Home Builder Association, myself personally, support these increases, and I'm open for questions.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you very much for coming down.
We have one more person who signed up on the wrong sheet. Jean-Pierre Villet.
He's coming up. Good morning. Thank you for waiting. If you could give us your name, and you have 3 minutes.
It's Jean-Pierre Veillette, and I'm with Northwest Sustainable Properties and SiteWorks Design Build. Thanks to great ideas and great leadership, Portland is a city renowned for building green. That said, the higher costs and the larger permit fees required to produce mid-rise green buildings have required that most green projects be either government-sponsored or luxury housing. Our project, EcoFlats, on North Williams, received a PDC loan due to its goal to shatter the belief that neighborhood-friendly green developments are cost-prohibitive and that net energy zero is too expensive. We have created a mid-rise model that can be enjoyed by the many and is highly reproducible. Therefore, we are on the verge of creating a field of infill workforce housing that is low energy, green, and transportation oriented. Unfortunately, due to recent unexpected spikes in SDC fees that hurt mid-rise green development the most, the current threat of an 8% increase from BDS and the inability for city agencies to produce a coherent remedy on how these fees ought to be handled, the future of green development is in jeopardy. The trail we are blazing, along with other green-motivated developers, will scarcely be followed. In order to remedy the SDC increases, we looked into city-sponsored incentives offered to defer transportation and parks SDC fees.